finish your year with your dream kitchen with help from Menards. Clearview Cabinetry offers a selection of finishes made with the finest materials and built to withstand life's sticky messes. They provide features like soft close doors and drawers and cabinet accessories to match your unique style. Don't wait to finish your projects. Save big money on Clearview Cabinets and check out our weekly flyer on Menards.com for more great deals happening now. Save big money at Menards. Brighten up your home with help from Menards. Illuminate your home with LED light bulbs from Fight Electric. They provide light that lasts with a rated life of over 10,000 hours. Don't wait to finish your projects. Save big money on Fight Electric LED light bulbs now at Menards. Plus, check out our weekly flyer on Menards.com for all the great deals happening now. Save big money
at Menards. Hey guys, welcome back to another episode of Shut Your Face with your host, me, Bree. Thank you so much for subscribing to this and listening to this and being supportive of this. It means the absolute world. It's the coolest thing ever. So thank you so much for listening to our podcast. Let's get into it.
So, now, we are live. Now, Miss Ma'am, Miss Melinda.
Yes.
Thank you so much for coming on to the podcast and talking to me. I caught you on Facebook with your post and the bit post. The whole biker chain bit post, which was hilarious because we got to talk about how people get so riled up. Like, they get really...
Yes, they do.
And you tell me a little bit about how, like, what made you post that and kind of just, like, what is your thoughts on having to deal with that type of those people?
So I genuinely like stirring the pot from time to time because that's just my personality. And I ride in a lot of bits that are deemed like way too much. Now, background on that, I grew up riding tennis walking horses, saddlebreds. I've done show jumping English. I've done the hunter jumping. I've done Arabians. I've done the cutting, the reining, you name it, I've done it. So my hands have been on hundreds of horses, hundreds of bits. There's a feel that I like, and I gravitate towards a bit with just a little bit more bite because I do ride really soft. Like, I gravitate more towards the cutting. I was really good at cutting. My sister was really good at English. So,
oh, cool.
I was so good at cutting because I didn't touch a horse. And so I learned early on that I need to have a harsher bit because I won't touch them. Like, I just kind of like wiggle my rein at them. And you have to have kind of a bit that allows you to do that. So with that, I have this, yes, ma'am, bit. And my girlfriend, boyfriend, they rope. They also have a mule mouth type bit. It's bike chain as well, but like, we don't know who made it. It was somebody at the Lazy E who made it. We cannot get a replica of it, but that bit actually made me find the Yes Ma'am bit. And I've ridden, oh God, a ton of horses. And I mean, like, not your like hard mouthed horses you would think. Like, I ride a lot of the Streak of Flings and Heavens. And so like super like light mouthed, you don't touch them kind of horses. And so I got that bit and I started putting it on my horses. I had a couple of outside horses that were like Corona Cartels and a Streak of Flings. And like, they all just like, that was like, I fixed so many problems with that bit. And so I'm like, I made a post last year about it. And in that time period, a lot of people had reached out. They're like, we want a replica of it. And I'm like, well, I was like, J.D. Morrow is probably one of the best at doing replicas of bits. I was like, let me see if he could make some. Well, he made a couple for me. I had a waiting list, basically. He made me two. I leased one out, and then I actually just sold one. But basically, anybody who was like, oh, we want that bit, and I was like, just contact J.D. He will make you one in, like, 2 weeks. It's ridiculous how fast he can make a bit. So I made that Facebook post again. Because I already knew after the Billy Allen Flay Hardy that I ride in, that like blew up, that bit blew up and people were like coming for me. And I'm like, if you think that bit looks harsh. I'm gonna show you a bit in my collection that, like, yeah, it looks nasty. But when I tell you, I don't touch my horses in it. So I made that post and I wondered if it was gonna blow up, and it did. And I really love the uneducated people who, and I don't even want to say they're uneducated, they're educated in their discipline, or they're educated with their hand.
Yeah.
And I guess I just grew up in a world where we did use a lot of snaffles, and I know how mean a snaffle can be. I know the damage you can do with a snaffle. So when I see something like a bike chain or a port, or God forbid, half the stuff we used in the cutting industry, they don't bother me, because I'm like, as long as you don't move your hands and you don't go to sawing on them, you're not going to do anything to these horses. Like, they're going to be fine. Like, I've had horses tear their faces up in super light bits because they'll just sit there and they'll, like, bounce and shake it in their mouth. And that'll cause more damage than anything like a heavy weighted port or my bike chains or anything like that. So
it's like you have people that you have 9 horse people into 2 categories, the ones that want to learn and the ones that refuse to listen.
And I find it's always, like, the English people. Like, I don't want to single out the English people, because my sister and my niece are, like, very big hunter jumpers. Like, my niece won the Pony Nationals this year on a pony she trained. Cool. So, like, the English is still in my blood, but it's that world. And it's interesting because they do ride a lot of, like, double bits or double reins.
Yeah.
And they're the ones who have a problem with, like, a bike chain. And I'm like, okay.
That doesn't quite add up.
It doesn't.
I think it's more, you know, it's more for, I don't think people realize that it's more or less for, like, the human that has the reins. Because you learn a lot by having a harsher bit. You literally learn to not touch them. If you have that type of bit in their mouth. Even the spades, like, people get crazy over the spades, and I look at it like, oh, okay, so your horse just doesn't move its face, basically.
Yeah, like, I want to literally flick my rein, and if you ever watch me ride, I kind of, like, lock my arm into my side, and I'm very one-handed, and if they get just a little bit heavy, all I want to do is do that. Like, I literally want to just ask you to come back. I don't want to, like, sit there and pull. I'm not strong enough. I don't have the patience for that. Like, I want to sit there with my hand positioned at my side, and I just want to go boop.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And that's all I want.
Yeah, but people just don't. It's like when you try to tell them that, though, they want to either argue with you when they have no reason to argue with you, or they just don't want to listen. Even, like, there's this TikTok that I happen to see, this girl. She's grooming her horse, right? Like, and he's probably, did you see it? I don't know if you saw it.
I don't. God, I watch too many TikToks.
I love TikTok, dude.
It's fucking savage. Y'all think Facebook is mean. TikTok is a whole. Everybody's like, oh, you should be TikTok famous. I'm like, I don't know if I'm tough enough for that. I can handle death threats on Facebook. TikTok is mean.
She's literally, he's probably no more than 2. He's young. He's a young horse, obviously. And she's just grooming him, right? And she's doing what you would do, I would do.
Finish your year with your dream kitchen with help from Menards. Clearview Cabinetry offers a selection of finishes made with the finest materials and built to withstand life's sticky messes. They provide features like soft closed doors and drawers and cabinet accessories to match your unique style. Don't wait to finish your projects. Save big money on Clearview Cabinets and check out our weekly flyer on Menards.com for more great deals happening now.
Save big money at Menards.
Around and he goes to nip at her, and she just pops him in the face. Like, she just pops him. It's not that hard, really. She just pops him. I would have done it. I probably would have popped harder, because I don't think people quite understand, like, you can't treat these animals like little kitty cats and doggies. Like, you don't hug them and love them. Like, you know, you have to have a level of respect. If you don't, you're gonna get hurt. And she didn't have a lot of people come at her, but she did have the normal comments of, don't do that to the horse. Okay, well, what?
Those same kind of people that made me realize a long time ago, I won't post my child on Facebook, because you can critique my horsemanship all day long. If you critique my parenting or, like, try to tell me what I should do with my kid, it's not going to go well. Like, you can tell me I'm the world's worst horseman. There is nothing you can say to me about my horsemanship that I don't say to myself on, like, a pretty daily basis. Like, I'll be sitting out there in the arena, like, huffing and puffing with a horse, and I'm like, why am I doing this? I'm so bad at this. Oh, my God. And then it, like, comes together, and you're like, oh, that wasn't so bad. Let's get another.
Right. Yeah, horses is basically, like, being proud of yourself and wondering why you're doing it at the same time. Insanity, basically. So how did you, guys, you and your family, get started into horses? Was it something that you started at a long time ago at a very young age, or did you get into it later on in life?
So I have a pretty unique upbringing in the sense that my dad was the son of a merchant marine in Indonesia. He was born in 1936. My dad was old. My dad's no longer around. He was very old when he had me. But he lived in Indonesia, and he grew up in a concentration camp and then came through Canada to get his PhD and MD, and then he came into the States. And my mom lived in Canada and then came down to the States to groom dogs. And that's how she met my dad, was my dad was a renowned dog breeder of Bouviers. So they had show dogs. We had show dogs. Like, what most big-time horse trainers have in head, like, the 30, 40 horses, that's what we had in dogs. Like, when I was a kid, I thought having 30 dogs was normal. I thought everybody, like, trained dogs and went to dog shows. So the showing of the animal was always there. My parents got pretty hard and heavy into Tennessee walking horses. My sister was one of, like, the top juniors showing Tennessee walking horses. So we had a lot of, like, big-time Tennessee walking horses when I was a kid. And that's also a reason why I chuckle when people are like, oh my God, you're abusing your horse. I'm like, well, I grew up in the Tennessee walking horse industry. Yeah. If you want to talk about some stuff that goes down, I could make you cry with the things that we used to do in, like, the 80s and 90s on Tennessee walking horses before the whole government thing.
I heard.
So, like, y'all sit down. Just sit down. So we had Tennessee walking horses for a while. And then we rode saddlebreds because we had a saddlebred barn just down the road from us. We decided, oh God, we wanted to do pleasure horses. We had a pleasure horse for a while.
Oh, wow. You went slow for no reason.
Well, I always say I was a spoiled little brat. And if anybody knew me growing up, they will tell you every day of the week, I was a spoiled little doctor's kid. If I wanted it, we got it. Like, there was no limit on my daddy's love for us. I was a spoiled little kid. Aww. Like, I didn't know how good I had it. So I remember the high school rodeo finals was coming to Springfield, Illinois, when my sister was like 16. And we went and watched it. And that was at that point in time, we then wanted the barrel race. We wanted to be barrel racers. I was 10 and we wanted to be barrel racing. So my dad went out and bought us barrel horses. And then because, like, most people in high school rodeo have been high school rodeoing or, like, rodeoing all their life.
Right,
when we realized, you know, like, we weren't that good at it. we were like, well, we want to do cutting horses because there was only, like, two kids that did cutting horses. So, like, our chances of going to nationals was higher.
That's girl math. That works. That's horse math.
So, dad went out and bought us a cutting horse, and so then we did the cutting. Well, in the process of doing the cutting horses, we also still had the barrel horses, and then I always joke and say I would still be doing the cutting horses, except for when daddy died and daddy's doctor money ran out, I realized I had to pay for all of this, and barrel horses were really cheap, and all I had to do was beat a clock and not be friends with judges. So I was like, I can do that. I had to take the barrel racing route, which I'm okay with that.
You know what? That's funny you brought that up, because you are right. You do have, like, two sets of types of disciplines. You have the ones that are judged, and then you have the ones that basically have a clock. And that's it. Like, there's no question. So that
I was a glutton for punishment. I had show cattle for a while, and I realized I really don't like being judged, and I don't like having to go drop hundreds of thousands of dollars to be worthy enough to, like, do this. And I was like, no, I'm good. Like, I'm good.
Somebody said one time, because I can't take credit for it, but I've said it before, but this girl said it one time. She was like, you call us crazy, but we literally pay people to judge us. So, like, but it is. It's tougher. Yeah. It's like, because I didn't grow up. I was naive to the rodeo world. I grew up like Western Pleasure and All Around and fun shows and 4-H and stuff, where you're used to being judged. You think that's what it is. And so the rodeo world is, it's like a whole nother ball game. It's almost like a culture shock where you're like, oh, but it is, I hate to say this, but I feel like it's a little more competitive on that side. And not as much as, like, maybe politically correct.
It's a different kind of competitive.
Yes, it's different.
When you get beat by a $300 sale barn pony and you're riding, like, a $30,000 horse, you're like, well, shit.
Yeah.
Like, okay. All right.
I can imagine. I mean, I wouldn't know, but because I wouldn't be able to ride barrels. But so that's primarily what you do now, though, is you more concentrated on barrel horses, or do you still kind of dabble in everything?
If I could afford everything, I would go that route. But it's 100% barrel racing horses right now. And I always laugh and said, if I was a better roper, I might have rope horses, but I didn't want to marry a cowboy. And I always rope myself. Like, I can rope better on foot than I can on the back of a horse. I always giggle because I'm like, I could have had some really nice rope horses, but like I had to go with the I don't want to say barrel racers are not talented, but I am not talented to have any other discipline. I had to go with barrel horses.
Did you see the mare that sold for 1.7? What do you think about that? Because I read a lot of mixed opinions.
Brighten up your home with help from Menards. Illuminate your home with LED light bulbs from Fight Electric. They provide light that lasts with a rated life of over 10,000 hours. Don't wait to finish your projects. Save big money on Fight Electric LED light bulbs now at Menards. Plus, check out our weekly flyer on Menards.com for all the great deals happening now.
Save big money at Menards.
I hate when people are like, oh, that horse sold, it's not real money. And people can get so mean about it. And I'm just over here thinking, we're all in the horse industry. As somebody who would love to sell a horse for that much money, I'm going to root for him. Because, I mean, we're all trying to make it. I don't know if it was real money. I don't care. My brain doesn't process that what money is at that point, because I've seen show heifers sell for $500,000. I've seen bulls sell for millions of dollars. So when I tell you, when a horse sells for 1.7 million, I'm like, okay, yeah. Like, shouldn't they?
Well, I mean, I think that we are going to get to a point to where a lot of people are like, you're going to lose the little guy. You're never going to lose the little guy. You're not.
No, you're
it's
not.
Just not going to happen. But I think it's creating a section of the industry that's kind of like horse racing, but not horse racing, where you've got some kind of like bigger money. Because here's the thing, and I don't know if anybody could thought about this, but if you took roping and rodeo and barrel racing and made it something you could bet on, it would get even more money. Because I feel like that's kind of like where it might be going, hopefully. But yeah, if you get 1.7, if you get that much money for a 3-year-old mare or filly, whatever, you know, go for it.
Yep.
God, sign the check. Take it over. Like.
Yep. So, I mean, if you look at a horse like Adios and he's made how much in his fraternity year? $600,000.
Yeah.
We're playing for a lot of money. I mean, you don't have to play for it. You don't have to pay into it. It's an incentive for a reason.
Yeah.
I feel like it's giving us more options to make money. Like, my good mare that I had that kind of kept me in the barrel racing industry, her LTE is like $30,000. Now, at the time, that was a lot of money. Because, like, that was like, you'd have to go to 3-day barrel races and win $1,000 at a time. So, like, the fact that she pulled $30,000, that was big. Now that's almost, who just won that? Emily Beazle just won that at bonus race finals on 3 different horses. Like, so that $30,000 is laughable now, but like at a time it wasn't. And that just tells you how far our industry has come. Like, I think Fallon Taylor even said that Rodeo Houston, I think up until like 2 or 3 years ago, was still paying what it paid in the 80s.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. Wow. So the fact that like that's what we were fighting with, and now we can like go sell a horse for $1.7 million and take it to a pink or ruby buckle and win $600,000 in its fraternity year. Our industry is finally getting somewhere.
Yeah, I totally agree. And it's getting some traction. Now, let me ask you this. What do you think could be, or what is one of the main things that you would like to see change in the barrel racing industry? Like, particularly, you know, from your side, like the trainer's perspective, or even, you know, in the actual race, what's one of the things that you would like to see improved upon?
Having grown up in the cutting and English world, I think having trainers, having a barn that you ride with is something you can't replace. Like, I learned so much basic horsemanship when I rode English. Like, that was, you had to learn how to ride your horse. You had to learn collection and rate and all the basics. And then you got to go over jumps. And even at that point, it was like rails on the ground and you worked your way up. And I feel like that's the one nice thing about the barrel industry is you don't really have to have horsemanship. True. I dare say that, but like there's still a time for it. I think if the world had more horsemanship, bits like my bike chain wouldn't be so like, oh my God, right. It would be, oh, well, there's a place for this. There's a time for this. Like she's wanting this, this, and this out of her horse where there isn't enough horsemanship and things like that are scary. Like people don't know how to look at them because we don't have that like basic, hey, you worked with your coach and you know, you met criteria A, B, C, and now you've worked up and you can go around the barrels. I mean, I even had a barrel racing coach. I had Narita Henderson out of Union, Missouri for years when we were learning how to barrel race because my dad was like, well, you had an English trainer and you had a cutting horse trainer. Why wouldn't you have a barrel racing trainer? So true. I think that's something our industry would benefit from, but I feel like those top people, it's really hard to get in with them because they are so busy. Yeah. I am kind of a clinic, bad word. I love going to clinics. I love going to clinics. I've gone to so many clinics and that is one thing that I can't encourage enough. I know they're expensive. They're like $800, but to like sit and ride with somebody who has experience, you're going to learn a lot. And even if you just go from like a simple horsemanship, like I could watch Seth Schaefer ride all day. I could literally sit in 100 degree heat and watch that man ride a horse because of his horsemanship. And he came to a clinic with Ashley. Oh my God. I was sold. I was like, this man is God in my eyes, but he just has basic horsemanship and it's beautiful to watch. And I think if more people were able to work with trainers and get the idea and the feel for it, our industry would change for the better.
Yeah, you're right. Because a lot of people have said that having like that English background or even pleasure or that other discipline background helps mold you better in other disciplines.
Yes.
So what is one thing that, now you mentioned a lot about cutting and all that kind of stuff right there, and you would like to do cutting. What's probably one of the hardest things you think that you had to overcome mentally as far as riding cutters and stuff?
Letting the animal work. People are always like, wow, you just, when you're running a barrel horse, you just trust them. And I think a lot of that goes back to the fact that when you're riding a cutting horse, you're moving your feet, you're moving your seat, and that horse is, when you ride a really good cutting horse, they're really dialed into that cow, but you don't have your hand. You essentially have your hand on their neck.
You just have to let it go.
Yeah, and that is really trippy to a lot of people to literally have enough faith to just go let their animal work. And that's one of the things in the barrel racing industry I see a lot of is, it's why these girls kind of get the pulling. And it's like, you got to stop. You have to have enough faith in your training that animal is going to go do what you taught it to do and let them work. And that is, it is really hard. It's why my sister didn't do well in the cutting. She had too much English background. And in the English industry, you can use your hands a lot.
Yeah.
And in the cutting industry, nope, no hands. So yeah, that was still my favorite part to ride a truly truly good cutter, and you can just sit there and use your feet and know that they're going to get where they need to get.
So you just made me think about something as far as the mental game is concerned, because we all know, like, mentally riding horses is probably 75% mental and then 25% actually riding them. You know,
we're all mentals, yes.
Yeah. but the fear concept, I think a lot of that probably just derives from fear, wanting to control the animal too much.
Yeah.
So what would you say is probably a good thing to consider doing to help overcome that fear, whether you're a beginner or you're seasoned, you know, because
I have a lot of effort in me. Well, I used to not, and one of my best friends is Randy Prindle, and I swear to God, that girl is so type B, it's painful. She is such a type B personality. I'm a little bit more type A, but she does so well, because in her mind, there's always another race. Like, go out there, try it. If it doesn't work, okay, it didn't work, and go back to the drawing board.
Right.
And it's really, I think it's hard if, like, for Randy, it's not that hard because, like, she's won everything. Like, there's really not much left for her to win. And so for her to just be like, you know, F it. Like, you know, if it's going to work, it's going to work. That's one thing. But for a lot of people who are local or regional, it's a lot. Like, you might not go to very many barrel races. You might only go to 3 barrel races a month.
Yeah.
Well, the mentality of trying to be like, oh, F it, if it didn't work, you know, there, it's a lot of money sometimes, like diesel and hauling and bets and entry fees. And I think most people just want to break even. So they're afraid to let go because they're like, oh my God, if I fail, it's money. But that's what keeps you from, like, getting there is,
yeah,
you kind of have to have a lot of effort in you. And I know, like, Ivy Conrado did a podcast a while ago where she talked about, like, where she was, like, bouncing back and forth between rigs when she was running Famy. And she's like, I wouldn't even have my boots. Like, I'd get to a rodeo and I'd have to borrow my boots, or I'd get out of somebody's trailer in Arizona and be like, hey, are you going this way? And then, like, jump into somebody else's rig. And the level of, like, huh?
Yeah.
Most people could not do the, like, whim, the, like, carefree, like, okay, if it works out, it works out, because we want to have that control because we want it to go right.
Yeah.
But you can want something too bad that you actually make it not happen. I've done that a lot, and I have learned over time that you can want it, but there's going to be a level of, like, you got to let the universe kind of, like, put you there. Just have faith that you've done the work, you've prepared yourself, and if it falls into place, it falls into place, or otherwise, you know, it wasn't meant to be, and go on to the next one.
It is what it is, right? Ways to not self-sabotage yourself.
Yeah.
101, just say fuck it. So now, as far as what you do, you've trained full-time.
I'm actually more of a stay-at-home mom. My kid's actually asleep in the bed. I have my own horses. I buy horses to train and resell.
Oh, okay.
I don't love training for the public. I will. The thing I don't love about training for the public is the people. I really don't like people.
I can't blame you.
I know that's odd. I know that's odd because of my Facebook presence, but I've just learned people have really high expectations, and if you don't meet those, it's really hard on the horse. Like, I'm the world's slowest trainer. Like, it may take me 6 months to get something. Like, I'm going to go through everything to make sure we got it. And anymore, people want 30 days that horse to be winning. Oh, 60 wow. days. Like, and it's just, I don't ever think that's fair on the horse. That's why I will buy them. I'll put the time that I think they need into it. And then when I'm comfortable with them, like, going on, and I know they're not going to fail, that's when I sell them. Because at that point in time, I'm like, I've done everything with you. You're going to go on and succeed.
That's probably really nicer, actually, to just kind of let it flow the way that it's supposed to flow. Because you probably have a range of different horses. You probably have some that actually do take too long. Then you have some that you probably get, and they just get it in, like, whatever, 30 days, but you can't.
Well, and a lot of problems, and I don't, like, this is going to sound really mean, but it's never the horse. Yeah. It's never the horse. It's horses only do what somebody has asked them to do, so you're training a lot of the person out of them. Well, I might get it out of them, but if the person doesn't come and ride with me or, like, work on themselves, as soon as I get that horse back, it's not going to work out because they're just going to go back exactly to what they were doing and what they were asking before. And the horse is going to be like, all right, I'll oblige. Like, okay. So it's always a little disappointing when you get a horse working so well and they send it home and 2-3 months down the line, it's right back where it was because nothing changed on the other side. And it's really hard to train for the public when that you're kind of battling an uphill
battle. I could imagine that, because I mean I could totally see that, which I've never trained for the public, so I don't know, but
I set my prices really, really, really high, like stupid high, so that people don't want me to train horses, because I'm like, I don't want to disappoint anybody, and if you're willing to pay me that much money, like, at that point I'm willing to take the gamble. But like, it's really hard to train for the public.
Yeah, I can imagine that. Just like I thought that you, that's funny that you laughed at my post this morning about smart mares and regular mares. Because it's like, if you know, it's one thing if you've got a horse that, like, this is actually kind of funny that we're talking about this. I think people tend to come at mares all of a sudden with a preconceived notion of they're going to be mean and they're going to be some type of way. You know, if they'll throw their ears back or they'll have like a hissy fit. I like to call them hissy fits. Like, okay, you're not really calm down. But then you have the ones that really are smart, that will really like make you think, and they'll really like put it to you. And it's funny because you can kind of tell people that have been around that type of horse and haven't been around that type of horse. Just like the people that get on your post about the bits and stuff like that.
Finish your year with your dream kitchen with help from Menards. Clearview Cabinetry offers a selection of finishes made with the finest materials and built to withstand life's sticky messes. They provide features like soft close doors and drawers and cabinet accessories to match your unique style. Don't wait to finish your projects. Save big money on Clearview Cabinets and check out our weekly flyer on Menards.com. For more great deals happening now.
Save big money at Menards.
You know, they're like, you don't need to do this or da 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 without actually understanding the whole physical concept of it. But
or riding the horse I might be riding in that bit. Yeah, that's I always laugh because at the end of the day, we're riding race horses, essentially. Like, in the 90s, we rode a lot of off-the-track horses before barrel horse breeding was a thing. So, like, that's where your, like, Dash to Fames came from and your Corona Cartels. And, like, so there was a lot of, like, run in these horses. And so now we still have a lot of run. We now have a lot of turn. And so you have people critiquing a bit like that. And I'm like, you guys realize we're riding race horses that are stronger than ever, faster than ever, can turn harder than ever, and you're wanting me to run that sucker in a smooth snaffle. Now, don't get me wrong, the mare that I had that won 30,000, I ran her in a D-ring smooth snaffle, didn't even know I needed a bit hobble. That's how stupid I was. Didn't even have like a curb, a hobble, nothing. Like, really, a smooth D-ring snaffle could have gone through her mouth. It didn't. I don't know how. But she ran and won a ton. Like, we were reserve world for APHA in a D-ring smooth snaffle. And so I always find it funny when people critique me and I'm like, I will run and win in whatever that horse requires. Like, I can ride most of my horses without a bridle, but when I'm tuning on them and I need them to do what I'm asking them to do in a split second, I gotta have control. Like, I'm pretty certain my shin is broken because my heaven mare is actually the reason I started riding her in the mule mouth. At one of the rodeos, she leaned on my inside rein so hard, she smoked a barrel, and I think she broke my shin. Like, I still can't touch it. It's been 3 weeks.
Oh, wow.
So, like, people just, they don't realize that we are riding rocket ships, what? And they to do it.
What is that big controversy with the whole, obviously I don't know because I'm not like barrel, like educated, but there was a big controversy between lifting the leg and not lifting the leg. Like, what is that? Like, apparently...
Controversy is I am not in good enough shape. So yeah, when Emily Beazel comes in there and she's got her freaking legs up by her ears, yeah, I'm gonna hate on her a little bit because I have to freaking ride to my point. Meanwhile, her horses are working so damn well, she just picks her leg up around her ear and like goes about life. That's my hate on it. I'm like, later in a C-section, I have no mobility in my legs. Like, if I don't put my horse to point A, point B, and then point C, we're going to hit the barrel because I'm not athletic enough to pick my ear up or my leg up to my ear. But
that's what I was thinking. I was like, there's no way I could lift my leg up. So I don't know what y'all are talking about. I don't know what it means.
What it really boils down to is, yes, we should always focus on proper horsemanship, but like Stevie Hillman said it the best, the way that she rides at home and the way she tunes on these horses is never going to be the same way that she runs them, because in that split second, if it means keeping a barrel up to win $26,000 in a round at the NFR, she's going to put that leg up over her ears in her mouth to get around a barrel. And yeah, if you're gonna tell me that $26,000, I'm going to be more flexible and pliable. I should be. But it just, a lot of people got their feelings hurt because they're probably not in the shape or can do it like these girls. And yeah, horsemanship should always be what we focus on. But at the end of the day, there's no judge. There's no judges telling us we can't leg lift. There's a timer. And if you hit a barrel, it's a fine. So if it means winning or not winning, yeah, lift your damn leg.
I would grab my ankle the best I could. I would get that leg up as quick as possible.
Pick it up. Like, Maggie, I think it's Polosinik. She, like, leans down and, like, picks up the barrels. And it's like, I'm not built for this.
I give it major props, man, because I'm like, there's no way that I could freaking do that. And to be able to think about it in a split second, I mean, obviously you run these patterns day in and day out, because your average person is going to kind of look at it and go, okay, you're running around through barrels. Well, it's a little, you got to get a little more technical than that. You know, you're looking at their shoulders, the way you come in, the angle you come in, like all of the things that matter as far as time is concerned. So I give a major props, leg or not. I mean, you know, whatever it takes.
Yep. When I've been like 0.01 out of a check at a rodeo, and that 0.01 was probably my horse giving me the extra room to get my fat thigh around. Yeah, leg lifting sounds way more like a way better solution than, you know, that 0.01 second that she gave me to, you know, get my fat thigh around the barrel. Whereas you have somebody like Emily who like lifts her leg up to the air and she can get around it and she beats me. Like, I don't hate on that. I probably need to do that.
But I mean, it is what it is. Like, when we were showing horses, we got to the point to where we wouldn't even bathe. I mean, we used to bathe every time we'd go to a horse show. We made it a big deal. Like, yeah, it was a big deal. But then sometimes you just got little fun shows and stuff. And my mare was bay, so I was lucky. I could just brush her, throw some show sheen, and it didn't technically have to bathe her, you know. Like, but you get to a certain point, you're like, okay, I probably should have, but I didn't. It's okay.
Yeah. Yeah.
Now, what is the biggest argument that you find yourself in as far as, or the biggest thing that you find yourself having to explain to non-horse people, like throughout your career so far? What's probably the biggest thing besides the bit, like just in general?
I don't understand because I don't talk to non-horse people. What? Non-horse people?
Where, what is that? Them?
Where do you find those?
Ew, don't touch me.
There's a lot of things. The few non-horse people that I do talk to, like my physical therapist and things like that, I guess it's what we spend on doing this to, like, win what we don't win. They're, like, trying to make somebody understand, like, oh, yeah, you know, I drove 3 hours one direction to kick a barrel over in 15 seconds to get back in my vehicle to drive. We are sorry.
I meant like, yeah, whatever you said, we didn't get it, but I meant like the question, like, maybe non-horse people before they turned horse people, like people that you've kind of encountered in the wild for they ask you things about, you know, horses or whatever have you.
I think it's always how much we spend on this this hobby. I say hobby because let's face it, 10% of the people in this industry actually do make it a living and do fairly well and make money and, you know, train and do this. The rest of us, it's an expensive hobby. Yeah. Like, it is an expensive hobby. Like, barrel racing doesn't pay my bills. At the end of the day, I am fortunate enough if I can turn a horse and make a profit, because, like, it doesn't pay my bills.
Right.
Like, it just doesn't. So, like, when people who don't have horses are like, well, why do you do it? And I'm like, because cocaine's a way more expensive and I can't afford that. So I prefer to get bit and kicked at.
I mean, you got to spend your money on something.
Yeah. I mean, I think when Joe Exotic or whatever his name was, the Tiger King, came out, and he was like, yeah, tigers are expensive, $2,000. And every single horse person was like, we could own a tiger for $2,000. That's cheaper than our barrel horse. Like, we could have a tiger for $2,000.
Huh. It's like, it is like playing the lottery, though. It kind of is like playing the lottery, you know, when you go out there and y'all go to these races and do the thing. Because sometimes you could hit it. You could hit a good little check. And then sometimes it's like, you know, because you're working with something else that you can't sit down and talk to. Like you're working with an animal that you has its own mind and own brain and everything.
Yep. I think that's always going to be, non-horse people will never truly understand why. I mean, half the time I don't understand why, but like why we choose on a Saturday instead of, you know, going to the lake to you know, go sweat.
Yeah, I don't think people quite understand that type of heat. When you got jeans on, chaps on, well, you remember, even non-barrel, even barrel racers won't get it. You got leather chaps, felt hats, straw hats. You got the full attire on in 90-degree heat, and you're sitting there thinking, why am I doing that?
The pleasure horse days when we had the sequins and the chaps and the, like, everything. Yeah.
Oh, Lord. But it's fun. You know what? On the flip side, it builds character. It builds hard work. You know, like...
I have a joke. Out of all the things that God could have given me a talent for, out of all the things, singing, dancing, anything he could have given me a talent for, he gave me this talent. And I question what the hell was going on. Like, like, why? Out of everything... Why this?
Right. Sure. Well, I mean, it could be worse. You could not have a talent.
I mean, according to Facebook horse trainers, I'm not that talented anyways, so.
Oh my gosh. Oh Lord. That makes me think about something else. You know, what would you say was probably the biggest hurdle for you as far as just personally riding horses? What was one of the biggest lessons that you kind of had to learn for your personal career that kind of just got you over that hump to where you were like, it finally clicked? Was it something major, something little?
I never had that option. I will be very honest with you. Even if there was a hurdle that I had to get over, I would say maybe my dad dying. But I never had that option. Like, it had to work,
right.
You know, there wasn't like a, it's going to work. No, it was a, if I'm going to do this, because my husband doesn't have horses. He's never had horses. He's a row cropper. Like, very much if I don't do well, he's like, why are you doing this? Valid. It's a hobby. It's expensive. Like, if I'm not pulling some money, why are we doing this? So I've always had the, like, we have to do this. It has to work. Like, and I think that's why I have the bits that I have and the So, like, it has to work. There is no backup plan. There is no other option. It has to work. Right. Like, when I buy a new horse, like, I have a new Heaven mare. She's a four-year-old. And people are like, well, what if it doesn't work with her? And I'm like,
that's not an option.
There is no option. I actually, a lot of people know me because I had a pretty bad sway back horse. He was a Famous Bugs out of my good mare. And he was really, really sway backed. And I always kind of joke, but it wasn't really joking. He's one of the only horses I have a full set of x-rays on. And I was looking for, if the horse was uncomfortable, if there was something that was going to prevent him from ever doing anything, it was a, we will just put him down. Like, I will cut my losses and I will just put him down. Like, he doesn't need to live a life that isn't going to be successful. Like, that's not fair to him. And I know a lot of people will disagree with that, but like, it wasn't one of those things. I've never been in a position where I could just keep a horse. And so like, he was going to have to do something. But if he wasn't going to be able to do anything and he was going to end up like in a kill plant, I would rather put him down and bury him in my backyard. Like, that was, so we determined he was just a sway back. So I worked my ass off with that horse and got him to the point where he was lifting his back and moving. And by the time he was a three-year-old, because I did this all while I was pregnant with my daughter.
Oh, wow.
I broke him out when I was pregnant, like 5 months pregnant. I climbed on his back, and within like 3 days, he was like loping around. By the winter of after having my daughter, he sat for like, I don't know, 30-ish days. He went to Lauren Stroud for a little bit, just so she could like fine tune anything that I did. But I got on him the first time he had been to this arena, and he had like 30 days off. Like, this was like first ride back. And I ended up dropping his bridle in the middle of the arena, and I rode him around bridleless and like had him spinning and stopping. Oh, cool. And this is a three-year-old with like 100 rides.
Oh, wow.
And I joked, I was like, he might not be a 1D horse, but he's so broke that now he can go do something. Yeah. He can go be somebody something. Not every horse is going to be your 1D superstar. That's why I like my horses so broke, because at the end of the day, if I sell them and they're that broke, people can
brighten up your home with help from Menards. Illuminate your home with LED light bulbs from Fight Electric. They provide light that lasts with a rated life of over 10,000 hours. Don't wait to finish your projects. Save big money on Fight Electric LED light bulbs now at Menards. Plus, check out our weekly flyer on Menards.com. For all the great deals happening now.
Save big money at Menards.
Enjoy them. You know, not everybody wants to buy a 1D horse. Not everybody wants a 2D horse. You have to make that horse their full potential. You have to get them broke. You have to get them to their full potential. And then they can be successful. And he actually lives with an older lady down in Louisiana, and she loves him.
Oh, like, cool.
But he's not, you know, the 1D standout fraternity horse. He's chicken wing. Like, you wouldn't know he was sway back unless you took a saddle off. But, I mean, they healed on him. They've calf roped on him. Like, he just did everything because I put the time into him, because there was no, like, well, if this doesn't work, it was a, well,
this is
going to work, and we're going to figure out where he works at.
Yeah.
Like, what fits this animal?
Yeah. That's awesome. That's really awesome. Because you're right. A lot of people can't grasp that mindset. They'll be like, okay, well, it has to be this. Okay, well, if it's not that, never mind. It's either all or nothing, instead of trying to find an avenue. But you just made me think about something else. Even racehorses, when they come off of the track, there's a time to, like, condition them into, I want to say normal, but, like, kind of a normal area, non-race. It's probably the same way with those futurity barrel horses and 1D horses. They have to come down to like a level where, because me, if I was shopping for a horse just to trail ride on, I probably wouldn't go buy an X1D barrel horse. I would probably get like, okay, well, are they hyped up? Like, are they used to running? Have we tuned them down?
You would be surprised how many people actually do that, because they have way too much money. And I've actually bought some of those horses and like put time and effort back into them and like steer and then like sold them so they could go on and do it again. Cause like you'll get people who are like, well, I can ride a 1D horse. They really can't.
They've
never ridden a 1D horse. Right. And then they actually these horses that are elite 1D horses and they quickly realize they can't ride them. And best case scenario is they will sell them. And you can get them and you can make them 1D horses again, but a lot of times they'll just stick them out in their pasture and you'll never hear of that horse again.
I mean, that sucks, because it's good though that people are able to have this mindset to where, okay, well, you might not be 1D anymore, but you're not ready for this person, so we need to work you down to be able to do this. Well, that's really awesome that you're able to do that though. So now your kid, are they gonna ride?
Once again, going back to my roots, I grew up with a lot of trainers and a lot of trainers' kids, and I kind of saw these people who, I mean, it was their life. They were trainers, and they had kids, and the kids wanted nothing to do with it because it was the parents' full identities. So I've always said, like, you know, if she wants to ride, I'll put a saddle on her horse, we'll go ride. If she wants to go to a barrel race, you know, we'll go to a barrel race. Like, I will match her energy for as hard as she wants to go. Like, if she wants to go run all summer at barrel races, I'll load you up, we'll go.
Yeah.
But it won't be something that I push that I'm like, you've got to be a top barrel racer. Because, like, you don't have to be a top barrel racer. Yeah. Like, you can go be whatever you want. I like barrel racing. If that's what you want to do, cool, you can come with me. But, you know, if it's your life. Like, if you want to go do something else, go do it.
That's funny you said your husband isn't into horses, because I feel like in the horse industry, you either have, it's either one end of the spectrum. They're either married and you're two trainers, or it's exact opposites. Like,
I learned really early on that if any guy ever told me how to ride my horse, I was going to punch him. And I was like, you know, the best case scenario is to not marry a cowboy. That might not be the best avenue for me, because if this man tells me how I should ride my horse, I'm going to kill him.
Yeah, I said that a lot because my ex-husband was not into horses. I've never dated anybody that was like rode or into horses. And I always kind of thought the same thing. I'm like, I don't know if I'll be able to handle that. It's different wanting to learn on your own versus having...
It's nice because, like, my girlfriend's boyfriend, he rides, and it's really nice to, like, bounce ideas off of somebody, like, somebody who knows what it is. But I will say, my husband's smart, and he'll watch my barrel racing, and he's like, that's what you did right there. Why'd you do that? Now, he might not have, a solution, and sometimes, actually, he will have a solution, and it's so stupid simple that I'm like, well, I feel stupid. Why? Like, goddamn, like, he'll be like, well, why didn't you do this or this? And I'm like, because I didn't think of that. Like, okay, but it's nice to have somebody to, like, bounce ideas off of. But I mean, my husband's really smart. He can watch my barrel racing and tell me what I'm doing. And I mean,
it worked. When I was riding back in the day, like, I was young, like 10, 12, 14, like, back in the day, my mom would say the things that would just click. And she's not a horse person. She's never ridden them or nothing. But I remember, I can totally relate to what you just said. She would say something and you're just like,
yep.
What?
My dad was the same way. He was a doctor. He was a freaking urologist. And he would watch us barrel racing. Like, my dad was crazy intelligent. He could watch the barrel race and tell you within, like, 2-3 tenths of a second what somebody's time was going to be, because he would just sit there and he could see it, and he could see where they were losing time. And so my dad, he would watch us from time to time, and he would be like, well, that's what you did right there, why'd you do that? Like, why did you do that?
Yeah, probably the most simple thing.
They see it from such a simple, like, we overthink it, like, and I mean I overthink things all the time. It's not that hard. Barrel racing's not that hard. It's 3 barrels, mm-hmm. and 3, well, 4 or 5 straight lines, but it's 3 barrels and some straight lines. Mm-hmm. Not that hard.
Right. No, like, yeah, you're right. We all do it, though. We all overthink.
It's harder.
Yeah, it's human nature to overcomplicate it, because you end up, for me, I know I'll overcomplicate things because I'm actually trying to avoid what I know the answer is, and then if I just stop and go,
yeah,
okay, stupid.
And a lot of times you'll end up making it worse because you're trying to avoid it instead of just running straight at it and being like, we're going to fix this.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah, absolutely. But I feel better now that other people do the same thing. I don't feel so bad.
We all do it. We all do it.
That's just like you said, the whole, like, people confuse your Facebook presentate, like, who you present yourself on Facebook with actual real life. And it's funny because I can get really kind of, I don't want to say caught up, but I could be like, see somebody's face and be like, oh, okay, well, that's, oh, okay. And then get like, that's not, what? That's not.
That's not. Well, when my post went viral, my girlfriend Jessica was like eating people up. She, and she's like, have you been to that person's Facebook? And I'm like, honestly, no. I honestly didn't get half of the comments because my Facebook like filters it out because I make money off of it, so they don't always show me all the comments, because when something goes viral, it just, they like, they almost make it smaller where you don't see things. So I didn't see like half the comments. Or she'd be like, did you go to their profile? And I'm like, no, I didn't even read their comment. I didn't even you know, I kind of posted and ghosted. And then I did kind of go back through and read things, but I don't, it's because I'm the way that I am on Facebook versus real life, is I don't want to look at somebody's profile. I learned really, really early on, with my degree in journalism, we actually took social media classes in college, because that's kind of, you know, social media came out when I was in high school, and by college it had really taken off. So I took social media classes in college, and that's the one thing that I really appreciate it, because it taught me that it's not real, that, yeah, you know, you are what you want to make yourself. Yeah. You know, I'm so much cooler online. But that, I mean, it's true, because like, it's all fake. It's, yeah, all fake. It's all for views. And I think that's generally why I get so much traffic, is I'm really blunt. I don't really try to be anything that I'm not. Like, I'm a little bit more outgoing on Facebook, but I'm a mountain man. So like, if you see me in real life, and as you've noticed, I will talk your ear off. I'm genuinely myself on Facebook. Yeah. I have the same injuries on Facebook as I do in real life. Like, and I think that's why people are drawn to my Facebook, because yes, I'm making money off of you, but at the same time, I'm not posting anything to make money off of you. That's why it made me laugh when people are like, wait, you're a con artist. And I'm like, no, because I would have posted this regardless. Like, if you go through Facebook, you'll notice I haven't really posted anything like crazy in a while. So like, for me to be a con artist, like, that, I'm the worst con artist in the world, guys. Like, this isn't working.
People, some of the things people say like absolutely blow my mind. You're just like, huh? A con artist?
Somebody told me I needed to do a TikTok like Clinton Anderson does, where he like reads his hateful comments.
Yeah, and I'm, you
like,
should.
That would be funny. Somebody called me a walnut, and now Danielle Parks, who you've had on your show, calls, yeah, me a walnut every day. Walnut. I'm like, I don't know what that means. I don't. Is that an insult? Because I really like walnuts.
And like, when you really get into the psychology of things, like, people will, they'll end up, they'll either argue with you because they have a keyboard, because it's more like, my biggest thing is a lot of the stuff that happens on social media would not happen in real life. It's like, you know, like, I look at my pages as my house. So when you come to my house, you need to respect me and my house. And it's like, they think that they're just entitled to do whatever, when you can just delete and block and roll on.
Yeah. And I, you know what? I won't delete. I won't block you. Like, you have to, my block list on Facebook is not that big. You have to like really be an unpleasant human for me to block you or remove you or like delete you.
Yeah.
I don't, you're allowed to have your voice. Yeah. Your voice is stupid. Your voice is stupid. But you're allowed to say it. Like, that's what you feel you need to say to me at the time.
Right.
There's a lot of people who can't take it, so I guess if you're gonna hate on somebody and tell somebody to kill themselves, already tried, I failed, so like, tell me to kill myself. Okay, well, I'm really bad at that.
Yeah,
so.
No, don't do that. Please don't. It's, well, if it makes you, I had people threaten me too, so it's okay. Don't, you know, it's like I said.
It never bothered me. It honestly, I have a really fucked up sense of humor and a really, I'm mentally not that great, but I'm also really great. I've been stuck in my life, so I take nothing personally. Like, it's bad how little I can take things personally. Like, you can walk up to me and call me the worst names in the world, and I'll just be like, okay.
That's good, though. That's good, though, that you're there.
That's what you feel you need to do. All right.
That's a really good spot to be, because I think that takes time and probably takes experience to get to that point. Because I don't want to say I've ever taken things personal, but I have taken some things. But now I'm starting to get a little bit like...
Trauma.
Yeah, you have to really, like what you said, you have to get to the point where, you know what, you're responsible for your actions, not me.
You have to look yourself in the mirror every day. I don't.
Right.
That
whatever makes you feel better.
Now, if you step out of line, like, I've had to, like, get after people on Facebook who've, like, bullied or, like, attacked people who are close to me. Like, if you make that a habit and that kind of becomes your personality, I will step in line and be like, dude,
yeah,
like, that's not okay. But, like, the random strangers who want to tell me they hate me, okay, well, I'm gonna lay in my pool and eat frozen grapes with my kid, and if you wait on me, okay,
yeah,
all
right. Yeah, it's just like social media is such a double-edged sword, because it makes it easy for people to do things they wouldn't normally do in real life.
Yeah.
But
I want my kids not on it.
Yeah, you know, I see a lot of people say things like, you know, I wouldn't be on here. I wouldn't be on here if it wasn't for my business. But it also kind of keeps you sane, because, in a sense, because you are, like, I would never have met Danielle or you or half of the other people, you know, that are relatable, and you learn about things that are happening and other stuff. So, again, I mean, that's probably anything in life that you have to deal with it, but that's what keeps me sane. I know that they wouldn't do it in real life. They would not pull up to my house and come say it to my face.
No, I really hope that they not, right. But I can't fix stupid, and if you want to pull into my driveway, my little 15-pound Chihuahua, pit bull, bunny rabbit, otter mixed animal, we'll probably let you know I'm here. So, if you want to pull up in my driveway, okay.
Right. Well.
Brighten up your home with help from Menards. Illuminate your home with LED light bulbs from Fight Electric. They provide light that lasts with a rated life of over 10,000 hours. Don't wait to finish your projects. Save big money on Fight Electric LED light bulbs now at Menards. Plus, check out our weekly flyer on Menards.com for all the great deals happening now.
Save big money at Menards.
Finish your year with your dream kitchen with help from Menards. Clearview Cabinetry offers a selection of finishes made with the finest materials and built to withstand life's sticky messes. They provide features like soft closed doors and drawers and cabinet accessories to match your unique style. Don't wait to finish your projects. Save big money on Clearview Cabinets and check out our weekly flyer on Menards.com for more great deals happening now.
Save big money.